to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Welcome to Keldabe Talk Radio. I am Frost Kamen, filling in today for Biohazard. With us, we have Crow.
Yo.
We have the Moose from the North, Thaxos.
Hey.
We have Pinocchio of the App Team.
Hello.
We have the Eternally Quiet Muriel.
How's everybody doing?
And we have our guest star today, who is actually the clan leader of George's Nast clan, Sarsk, with us as well. And in recent events in the Mandalorian Mercs, our Mandalore, Noval Talon, decided to go ahead and present a check for $1,000 to Kennewack Elementary School in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, from the Vertica Fund. The school was... deeply underfunded. Most of the students are at or below the poverty line. And the money is going in to pay for a special needs program. So for those of you who donated to the Vertica Fund this year, that's part of where that's going. And up in Wampa Clan, you guys had an event recently, didn't you?
We did. We were part of the Bangor Festival of Lights Parade, pretty much just the big Christmas parade for, you know, our little chunk of central Maine. Decked ourselves out in Christmas lights. We covered Ian and Abby's Jeep with a little stuffed Wampa, the C5 Wampa, for those of you who had that and had the pleasure of ripping its arms off. I personally wore two strands of those battery-powered Christmas lights and had my new Christmas tree backpack with a big blinking snowflake on the top of it, so we drew a lot of attention, made the kids really happy.
Nice. Yep. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it was awesome. And not as cold as last year. It didn't freeze. Yeah. It was nice, which is a rarity up here.
70 degrees in Georgia right now.
Man, I get wicked snow envy. Like, I grew up in Chicago, which meant that there was snow everywhere. And
oh, yeah.
You guys taking all of your beautiful snow pictures and all that stuff, frolicking around in your winter glades.
Snow is fantastic. Just saying.
Unless it's minus 40.
It's the devil.
Then it's just cold.
Snow is the devil.
Snow is not the devil.
Well, that's pretty awesome. And, Chase, you guys are doing an event pretty shortly, right? In the next couple days.
Yeah. Thursday night, we're doing lights, kind of like what Ian did, but in Georgia.
Excellent.
I'm not wrapping myself in Christmas lights.
But isn't that half the point?
No.
Gotta have some blinky lights, don't you?
It's the point when I do it.
Well.
You're gonna be that one guy that's standing there without any lights on?
I don't think anybody's done lights. Like, I've
really?
Been doing the parade for the last 2 years, and nobody does anything Christmas. I think one of the RL 501st people had a big present on his back, but I think that's about as far as it's gone.
Yeah. Now, for people that don't really know, is it taking place in the evening where you would actually see the lights, or is it more daytime where it's kind of, you can see you guys pretty well anyways?
It gets dark out here about 5:30, so.
Okay, well, it's not like it's in the middle of the day, though.
No, because, you know, people have to work. But it's like 7 o'clock, so it's nice and dark. And.
Okay, nice. Looking forward to seeing the pictures from that, then.
I've been dragging Clayton with me to these parades, and 2 years ago he got his gauntlet ripped off by some little kid.
I think I remember hearing about that.
He's still mad about it. It's hilarious.
Did it break or did he just pop it off?
Oh, he ripped the hinge off of it.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Was it vacuum form?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's actually really bad because, hey, here's your armor tip for the day. Vacuum form armor can tear, which is a problem,
yeah.
Especially if you put metal application through it and then pull on it. It doesn't do it a lot, but when it does do it, it's a problem. So reinforce when you put metal applicators in. Put another piece of plastic behind so you can drill into that.
Yeah, the hinge just popped off with the glue and it just nice.
That's good. That's much better.
Yeah, that's not too bad then.
How is he still upset about that then?
You know him.
That's true. In other Star Wars news, there's actually been a release of a new Star Wars video game, and it's not 1313, and it's not Tor, because that already came out, but there's other news about that that we'll get into later. Instead, it is Star Wars Angry Birds, which is a lot like Angry Birds, except Star Wars.
It's actually very close to Angry Birds in space.
Yeah, pretty much. Angry Birds in space. And they actually released just recently a video for the second one. They're doing Angry Birds, The Empire Strikes Back, and it's got like AT-ATs and stuff with it. But that means that we're going to have both Angry Birds in space and Angry Birds on ice.
Yep.
And also...
Hopefully not on ice.
Well, they said that, I mean, they're doing Echo Base. They even showed, like, the little video had piggy walkers, like, sliding
around. Oh, okay, that's what you're talking about. I thought you meant, like, going ridiculously too far with commercializing it and making an actual on-ice.
I mean, I was at Joanne's buying snaps today for my new vest, and I saw an Angry Birds coloring book, so I'm pretty sure they've already gone too far with merchandising. Like,
that's true. Apparently there's actually a toy version of the Angry Birds game.
Oh, yeah.
With like, the AT-AT walker and everything, and I think he's got, like, some little catapult springboard launcher, and you fling the little things, and you got to knock over the pigs in the AT-AT walker.
I've played the board game version, where you...
There's a board game version?
Yeah, there is. You get the little wood bits, and you put them together. Like, it's, like, sort of a two-phase thing. The first half is kind of like Jenga. You have to, like, build this ridiculous thing for your opponent to knock down, and then your opponent's got the little plastic bird with a little... crappy little plastic catapult, and you can't hit anything. Not a thing.
No,
it's a lot harder than it is, considering it's supposed to be a game you play with your children.
Sounds like after a couple rounds, you'd probably just end up grabbing the birds and hucking them at the opposing tower.
I started playing it with my in-laws after last Christmas, and we stopped playing. No one won. We just stopped playing.
Oh, it's kind of like Monopoly, then.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
The game, no one wins, and everyone loses. Mostly friends. You lose friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, in other big news, Star Wars Tor just did its conversion to free-to-play, which is actually kind of a big deal, because a lot of MMOs that have been struggling, and Star Wars Tor, sadly, has been struggling since release, have converted over to the free-to-play model and make a ton of money. Examples include Dungeons & Dragons Online, Lord of the Rings Online, Star Trek Online. Basically, all of those insert IP here online have all sort of done that kind of thing. And Champions Online. And Warhammer Online. The list just goes on.
Well, it's a smart model for these days.
Yeah, well, nowadays, there's actually only one MMO that sticks to the traditional model, which is WoW. And that's
Pandas.
Because it's WoW. It's like
WoW is the model.
Well, it's like Walmart. Normally, retail businesses don't make a huge profit margin. Like, they make good money, but they don't make a giant profit margin. Unless you're Walmart, in which case you're like the fifth richest country on Earth.
It's already established itself well enough that it can just continue to keep that support base and doesn't really have to worry about catering to people's proper needs.
Exactly. So the thing is, Tor decided they were going to go over to a free-to-play model, and this is the interesting thing. Their free-to-play model was probably... I've been an MMO gamer for a very long time, and I've seen a lot of free-to-play models. Tor had probably the most draconian model I had ever seen, in that it actually physically prevented you from playing the game to the same degree that other people could play the game. Most free-to-play models oftentimes will sell power, or they will sell ease of play through additional ease. Like, for example, in World of Tanks, you make more money per battle and more experience per battle by, like, a factor of 50% if you pay to play the game.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can also buy fantastic tanks.
Yeah, exactly.
You can also pick up, you know, things that you otherwise would have to wait and level up to get, which you can get normally. And it doesn't really restrict your ability to play compared to the free-to-play guys.
However, in Tor, they were essentially taking game features and stripping them out. For example, they were doing stuff like taking away the chat window. So now you're no longer playing an MMO. you're playing an RPG in which other people are stealing your kills.
Yeah.
Because you can't interact with anyone. You weren't able to form groups, couldn't have professions, all that stuff. At one point they had talked about not letting you have a companion, which I don't know how many of you have played Tor, but the game is literally impossible after about
without
2/3 of the way without one. And almost all of the boss fights are just straight up impossible without one. So
yep.
they were doing a bunch of things that could be heralded universally as really, really draconian and probably pretty stupid. At least if you were trying to entice people to pay money to play your game.
Yeah, because the last thing you want to do is split your user base into the people that have stuff by paying and the people that don't have stuff by not paying. And
well,
it divides them, and then people don't want to play.
Except that's what happened.
Yeah, well, and the most notable thing that they wanted to do was they wanted to strip away two action bars from players. Now, people who played World of Warcraft, there have been a lot of refinements in the game to where you only need about, depending on what class you're playing, anywhere between 6 to 15 buttons, which you can do in two action bars. Tor was based off of a slightly earlier game model than that and has a lot more button creep. You have a lot of cooldown buttons you can use and all that jazz. So there's a lot of buttons you need to have in the game. You need more than two action bars, is what it boils down to. And
definitely.
The fact that they were removing that ability and the ability to customize your UI from free-to-play players meant that they were physically handicapped when playing the game. So it was pretty bad. The real interesting thing, and this is something that doesn't really happen, especially not with anything controlled by EA, is that they actually listened to the public outcry. Because when people said, no, this is really going to just make everyone not want to play your game, they were like, you know, maybe that's true. So they actually started doing what players suggested. So, for example, players do not have their action bars limited, regardless of how they're paying to play for the game, or if they're paying at all. They gave them back the ability to fast travel. So you don't spend 3 hours walking from one side of a planet to another to turn in a quest, and then walk 3 hours back to the other side of the planet to do the second stage of the quest.
Yeah.
So
why they would think that's a good idea to take away from the begin to begin with, I don't know.
The game's not that great to begin with.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Star Wars Tor has had a big management problem, which is that, development is in the hands of BioWare, and so is the community management. However, the management allocation and decision making regarding actual content development is EA. So essentially, anytime BioWare wants to do anything, they have to pitch it to EA. And that means that it's basically going through an additional level of bean counting, and there are people who don't have the same sort of idea of architecture and direction who are making decisions about architecture and direction for the video game. And it means that stupid crap, like their original free-to-play plan, existed. And I'm glad that BioWare has shown EA that with all the bad press they got about Mass Effect 3 and all the bad press they got about this, that sometimes BioWare does actually know what they're doing and sometimes the fans are worth listening to. And I think that's the big takeaway thing from this, is that change actually happened.
Didn't the leadership of BioWare, though, retire largely because of Tor kind of failing?
A lot of people in BioWare started bailing after the Mass Effect 3 thing because Tor and Mass Effect were both pushed 3 months early. BioWare wanted extensions on both games for 3 months, and EA told them they weren't allowed to have them, and it meant that they released unfinished games.
Which is quite unfortunate.
Oh, it really is. I know a lot of people whose souls were crushed by how good Mass Effect 3 was until the last 45 minutes, where you're basically on rails.
Yeah.
And they're adding in a lot of DLC that was supposed to be in the core game.
Which then just makes fans kind of wonder, why am I paying for this if it should have been in the game to begin with?
Yeah.
Well, that's DLC up and down.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole other,
yeah.
whole other barrel of fun.
Yeah.
Whole other can of monkeys / worms. Worm monkeys.
Monkey worms.
But, so there you go. That's the section for Tor.
Hmm. This is the sound of tiny worms eating your brain. Do not let tiny worms eat your brain. Get you and yours vaccinated from the tiny worm epidemic. Head down to your local clinic and get a Bacta vaccination today. Also, try Bactalax.
All right, and we're back with Sarsk, and we're going to be asking him a couple questions to get to know him a bit better. For those of you that haven't had the opportunity to meet him, he frequents Dragon Con, as that's his local big convention down in Georgia, and you know, he's a pretty well-known figure on the Mercs, and he tends to do a fair bit on the work in progress, so chances are you've had some critiques or help on working on your kit from him. So, first question for Chase would then be, how did you find out about the Mercs?
It was for AdventureCon, the last, it was in Knoxville, with Kessler and Lucas McCoy and Kevin. I didn't want to do a Mandalorian costume, but after that weekend, I decided that it was necessary.
And what year was this?
It was actually the first year that we met, I believe.
Yes.
Because I remember hanging out with you. You were doing a Kiffar costume, weren't you?
Yeah, 2009, you were in the Jedi outfit.
Yep.
Ah, very cool.
Long time.
So what exactly was it about the Mercs that stood out that made you want to consider joining as opposed to joining a different group or just doing your own thing?
The people. I mean, everybody that I met was really cool. Just had a lot of fun. And I figured that if, you know, half the people were like these guys, then it would be in my best interest to join the club.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned that you had decided that you would have to make some armor for yourself. Was there any inspiration behind your armor?
Well, I guess there's a little bit of samurai inspiration, you know, because of the flags and the sword.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's traditional.
Yeah.
He really liked those Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad as a kid. That's the real reason he does Sarge.
I've never even heard of that.
You were blessed to have never heard of that.
Yeah. I remember back at Dragon Con, I think it was the like second time I'd been trooping a con with you. Those flags, they tended to be kind of awkward, though. Coming back from the Dragon Con parade, everyone was going up the staircase and you got stuck.
Yeah, that's when they were...
Had to take the elevator.
Yet to find a good method to attach those things without them either falling off or be getting stuck in doorways.
Yeah. They definitely look awesome when you're in a parade, but doorway logistics can be interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
So, apart from the Mandalorian, what other costumes do you have and what are they?
I have a Jedi costume, I have a Sith costume, and I'm working on, like, 40 other costumes.
40 other, wow.
Yeah.
Now, the Jedi and the Sith, are they face costumes or just generic or custom?
Yeah, it's just costume stuff. Nothing too fancy.
Oh, okay. You're not a member of any of the other costume Star Wars groups with those, are you?
No.
No?
Nope. I should probably join the Rebel Legion, but I'm just too lazy to take pictures.
Yeah. Or the Dark Empire now. They've also got the Sith that you could do that with, too.
Yeah.
I don't know how many... I'm not too sure on where exactly their members are distributed, and I'm sure there's a fair bit pretty much everywhere these days.
CEO of the Rebel, like 20 minutes away from me, and he always bugs me about getting pictures with... Back to that.
Jason, right?
Yeah, Jason Rutledge.
Jason Rutledge, yeah. He's a nice guy. What would you say that your favorite part about your clan would be? Like, what's the best thing to you that you find about the clan experience or mentality?
If you've ever hung out with Nos Clan.
Well, yes, but explain to our listeners that haven't hung out with Nos Clan like some of us have had the opportunity to do.
I guess you could say we have a bit of a reputation for being
just a bit.
Just a little bit.
Slightly off the wall, crazy. Just a small.
Observe.
I'm pretty sure we had that since it was a baby.
It grew to a very large baby.
I've got one for you, Chase.
No.
And this is to dissuade people from trying to be clan leaders. What is the hardest thing about being a clan leader?
Oh, God. The politics.
Is there anything specific that jumps out in terms of the politicking? Is there any one aspect that really is the difficult part as opposed to the rest?
People that want things a certain way that make somewhat difficult.
So it's the interpersonal managing of people and making sure people don't tread on each other's toes.
Yeah, especially when you've got more than like 20 people like we do.
Yeah, how many people does NosClan have now?
I don't know, like 20.
You don't know?
24, 25.
Wow, that's a fairly big group.
Yeah. And then, you know, you got a bunch of new people coming in, and sometimes personalities clash.
Yeah.
Sense of humor, yeah, so people get a little touchy or offended by some of the things that we say because, you know, we're NosClan. We're all ridiculous.
Are you referring more in person or on the boards? Because I've noticed that a lot of times on the boards, it's just a matter of the internet does not give context to the tone in which you're typing.
There is no such thing as tone of text.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what smiley faces are.
And
I know, right?
I guess a little bit in person, too, because
the
way we act online isn't really that far from what we act like in the structure world.
It's a little less sloshed.
What are you trying to say?
Single malt.
Moving onwards, what would you say would be your favorite event and why?
I'm beginning to like smaller conventions more.
Yeah.
Because Dragon Con's just getting ridiculous. You know, there's 4 million people at Dragon Con every year. And
Dragon Con was pretty ridiculous this last year.
Yeah. It was,
I think it has a lot to do with sports games, too.
Yeah.
Like, it really depends upon who's in town.
Is there a particular smaller convention, though, that really jumps out at you?
Well, when we went to Adventure Con, that was Forge, and it was horrible. And I guess they moved it back to Knoxville, but I didn't go this year.
Nobody.
Yeah.
They moved it back to Knoxville because Pigeon Forge did so poorly and people aren't going back to Knoxville either.
Yeah, the first time they held it in Pigeon Forge, it was just NosClan. I mean, we had, God, like...
It was your convention?
Yeah, so we just took over Tennessee when we...
You don't need that Tennessee.
there's a couple local conventions in Atlanta that are a lot of fun. We go to MomoCon and all the anime kids look at us weird. Atlanta Comic Con.
NosClan also kind of has a. I'm not sure if the tradition yet or but you guys tend to try and make it up to some of Talent Clan's conventions Con Carolinas.
Yeah, Con Carolinas every year.
Yeah, which I had the pleasure of attending it 2 years ago, and that was quite a lot of fun with both Talent and NosClan there together.
Bit of a surprise, if you will.
a bit of a surprise for a couple of you guys.
Like, oh hey Sean, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, for those of you guys that don't know, I only told two people that I was going down for a Con Carolina, so I decided to surprise everybody. It's quite the fun time and pretty hysterical reactions for some of the people when they first realized, hey, the Canadian is down a couple thousand miles from where he should be. What's going on?
Then James trying to mummify himself.
Mumra the ever living.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll open it up to if any of the other members have any more questions for Chase regarding NosClan or him being one of the, being an Allerad for NosClan, something like that, or just his experiences in general.
Why haven't you guys gotten in as extras in The Walking Dead yet?
I don't know.
Gotta try.
I know one guy in The Walking Dead, but none of us has made it as an extra.
Shoot, I'm totally forgetting his merch name, but David was trying to. He came close to being in it, I think.
He had to be extraordinarily skinny, kind of like that.
Well, yeah, that's David, man. He is very skinny.
Yeah.
There are no fat zombies.
Cool. That's thank you very much for your insights on being an Allerad of NosClan, and good to have you on.
Thank you.
And moving forwards, we're going to be going next to our Q&A segment where we've posted up on the Facebook page and asked, what other people have some questions for us, and we'll do our best to answer them. And
I think I got a good one here.
All right,
we got. I have no idea what your merc's name is. I'm sorry, but how should the backplate fit and be worn? A couple people have liked that one. I'm not. The simple answer is on the back. if you're wearing it somewhere other than the back, that does put some complications in on your application.
And you need to make sure it's right side up. That's another big one.
Yeah, there are a surprising number of upside down back plates.
And that it covers
your...
Yeah,
I think Brian's probably got the most knowledge on this one, being part of the app team.
The short version is that it covers your whole back adequately, but it's not so huge, it's just, you know, kind of sticking out on the sides and just hanging in space. I mean, it's just like every other piece, it has to be fit to your body. And if it looks too small, it probably is too small. If it looks too big, yeah, it's probably too big.
And for most people that aren't too sure, they should probably err on the larger side. That way they can easily trim it down rather than going too small and having to remake a whole new one, correct?
Yeah.
Additionally speaking,
a little big.
If you're having trouble actually forming your backplate into whatever shape it is you want it to be, because getting that double curve on your back can be really hard with thermoplastics, because what ends up happening is you make the first curve and then you try and make the second one, and the heat from the second one makes the first one warp out. I bet you guys know what I'm talking about, those of you who have done this before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can either...
Backplates are...
They're a pain. They are a pain.
You can either
got to rebend my metal one when I'm up in North Carolina in a couple weeks, so
yeah.
You know,
well,
constantly working on them.
The two tricks that I know of is, one is you use paint cans. You heat the section that you have. You make your first curve, then you literally just put it on the ground on a flat surface. You put paint cans in the depression, so you're facing it inside out. You put paint cans in it so it will hold that second shape for you a little bit. And then you make the second curve on it manually.
Right.
That's one way to do it. That was the way I figured out to do it anyway. Another way, and this is arguably simpler, is to just take the backplate template that you see, cut it into three pieces, and then add another half inch onto the back of it, or onto the bottom of each of the plates. Well, the dividing lines between the two plates. The middle plate gets basically an inch bigger. The other ones each get a half an inch longer on the sides. And what that lets you do is you can just segment it. And if you put more attachment points on it, it will just sort of naturally follow the curve of your body. And if you do it with a nice square shape, it doesn't look too awkward. So, and it's actually a lot easier to move around it.
Yeah, and if you're sort of on the skinnier side, like I'm a tiny, tiny man, so they,
man is kind of stretchy.
But they, if you go with more of a straight up rectangle shape, like, you know how the top sort of has a taper to it where it sort of goes up around your shoulders a little, around your arms. If you just kind of make that more of a straight line, it'll do a lot to make it look smaller, and it won't be flapping around on the sides, and, you know, it won't poke out at weird angles from side view, because mine's almost a rectangle when you look at it when it's not on my back.
Yeah, it's all about sizing it to fit you.
To cut out around the shoulders a little bit so you can put your shoulders back and, you know, move your arms.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you put your shoulders back and your shoulder plate pops off, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah. And if
you fit you.
Yeah, and if you can't put your shoulders back, you're going to be very uncomfortable. Constantly. Yeah,
definitely that. Alright, what else do we have for questions? Here's another one. When attending a convention and working the booth or a table, how does one deal with the, quote, annoying kids that won't stop asking questions for hours and hours without losing your cool?
Politely go to the next person.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. I gotta talk to, you know.
Yeah. Quietly ignore them. You know?
Yeah, you can. There's all sorts of different. Like this is more about somebody knowing how to use their own social graces. You can find any different number of ways to get rid of that person. You don't need us to tell you how to do that.
As long as you're not rude about
it. If you are officially representing the club, remember that you are actually officially representing the club. So even if it is annoying you, technically speaking, that is what you're there to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that once you're off the table duty, that you have to let them follow you around the convention and keep asking you questions. You're welcome to do whatever you want, so long as it's not violent, to them after you've gotten off your table duty. However, while you're on the table, you kind of just have to put up with it.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, you can transition to other people, but if there is no way to do that, then you just kind of have to deal with it.
For the most part, I haven't found that there's any real kids that have been too inquisitive to the point where they get annoying. Probably the only examples I can think of at that point, the parents would step in and go, "All right, you've been bugging this guy long enough. Time to go."
Yeah.
So, you know,
I've never really had a problem with the kids. It's like the odd, weird, you know, 40-year-old guy. Just, you know.
Those are the ones I have trouble with.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a little harder to dissuade. But, but again, you just kind of have to just sort of
take it in stride.
Yeah, just sort of deal with it. Put on your big boy shades and deal with it.
Yeah, just wait for someone else to come along, and then you just transition your attention. And
exactly. The technique that works for a while. A technique that works really well too is just kind of, Sark, I know it's had a talk about this topic that you want to know about. And then ditch.
Yep.
Just pawn it off on someone else. Pass the buck.
Yep. Oh
that's
yeah.
That's what I do.
Oh yeah.
It's better for those if you're of you in armor because then you can put your helmet on and like start doing photo ops. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. Hold on a second. This guy wants a picture of me. And gone.
Or what Steven does is he props himself in a chair, puts his helmet on, and falls asleep.
I've seen him do that.
He's awesome.
He is a piece of living scenery.
Yep.
I have the pictures.
But so that's how you deal with that. Additionally, somebody else asked about dealing with people who claim to do C&D orders, essentially, reporting people for copyright infringement or whatever. I've been doing this for a number of years,
one of the C&D guys?
No, and I have never once run into a C&D guy. I have never once had a C&D guy show up and be like, well, at which point you can then quote the Parity Act at them if you know it, or you can just say the Parity Act protects my rights to do this so long as I don't make any money off of it. Which is true.
Yep.
Additionally, we're also a licensed Lucasfilm organization. So, and even with the Disney merger, we are still protected in that we are a recognized charity organization, and so long as we are a recognized charity organization and do not violate the terms of Lucasfilm endorsing us as one of their recognized charity organizations, they're not going to strip us of our status, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's not like one, if you're getting harassed by a lawyer or something who seems to think that you're breaking the law and probably just has a grudge against you personally, there's nothing they can do to the club about C&Ds or anything like that. That's not a real thing. If somebody is doing that to you, they're just trying to get your goat.
Yeah, an actual cease and desist would be a legal letter that would be probably come certified mail. I mean, people just don't walk around handing those out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a
problem. Yeah, all of the...
Well, or the unless they do, at which point they usually have a notary delivering them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but they don't do it like it's on TV, where they just show up, say, you know, with a bunch of flowers, hand you the flowers with an envelope, and they say, "Hi, you've been served." That they legally can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, although most members on the Mercs really don't need to worry about that. I mean, if you're making something custom or one-off, you're not going to have any trouble with it at all. It's the people that go in to make, you know, say it would be someone that makes Stormtrooper armor or Clone Trooper armor, and on their website publicly advertises, "Hey, I sell this," you know. And the only real thing that I guess with Disney now being back, people have this fear that they're going to be very strict on their intellectual properties, which they have been in the past. But it just means that people will go back to where they would post on their website is, "Hey, check out this stuff I've made. Contact me if you want info." And they don't say they sell it, and they don't, you know, publicly post prices. And apart from that, I mean, you can still go and do it. I mean, most stuff you do a limited, even if you publicly post it, you're selling it, you can just do a limited run, basically.
Yeah,
you say, "I'm making 20 of them," and that's it. And that's perfectly fine. You're allowed to do that.
In general, commissions are protected by the Patriot, or not the Patriot, excuse me, the different act. Additionally, commissions are generally protected by the Parity Act. And that means that they cannot jump on you for doing a quote-unquote one-off, even if you have a factory mold that you're using to make them, so long as you do them on a one-by-one basis. you can still technically produce them. It's not something to be concerned about. If somebody is doing this to you locally, they're doing it to you because they hate you as a person, not because they are trying to actually undermine the club. That's not going to happen.
And there are many, many other things you can do to deal with these people on that personal level, which, you know, that's all going to go into the particular situation, so we won't discuss that.
Yes.
The easiest one is to just ignore them.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah.
Additionally, somebody asked us how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood. You'd actually have to ask woodchuck on the forums.
Though I'm sure it's quite a lot. He does a lot of carpentry, so I'm sure he can throw some lumber.
Yeah, the man is a genius of laser cutting and gluing and all that stuff he does.
He makes fantastic wooden replica guns, for those of you that don't know.
Yeah, they are pricey, but they are worth it.
Oh, God, yeah.
I wouldn't even call them pricey. They're quite well priced considering the quality.
Well, yeah,
that's
true.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, I was comparing them by say resin, but
yes,
they're
not well
cheap,
worth the
but
they're
worth the effort.
Yep,
extremely high quality.
And favorite races besides Mandalorians, of course. So Brad,
well, Mandalorians aren't a race. So
yeah, no. There you go. Mandalorians aren't a race.
They're a culture.
No longer a race. Humans are a race.
Boom. Done.
Headshot. That question's over. Brian, what's your favorite race? It's Twi'leks. We know it's Twi'leks.
It's Ewoks.
I hate you.
Damn, I was going to say that.
He could have said Gungan. So,
die.
No, it's Ewoks. I'm going to go with Ewoks, and I'm sticking with Ewoks.
Alrighty, Moose, what about you?
No other race of aliens ever seasoned Han Solo for cooking.
No, that's true.
They were putting a dry rub on Han Solo, so I will defend the Ewoks.
It's a good thing the Ewoks didn't team up with a Sarlacc, because Han would have been toast then.
That's right. They put a little Memphis dry rub on Han, and they throw him into the Sarlacc. That's
done.
Good eating.
It just takes 1,000 years to get over the indigestion.
That's right. Da do da do da do da.
Alrighty. Moose, what about you?
You know what? I'm not too sure. I mean, there's such a wide variety.
Twi'leks. Ted likes Twi'leks. Just... All right.
Be quiet. Bro. I don't know. I'd have to say the Kel-Dor are pretty cool.
They are. Plo Koon's kind of a badass.
He is, yep. And the voice, the effects that they put on his voice in the movie and shows are just pretty neat, too.
The ability to survive vacuum for a brief period of time is always pretty cool.
That always comes in handy, yeah. Especially if you have fingerless gloves.
Oh, yeah.
Certain someone we know.
Yeah.
All right, what about you, Crow?
This is going to sound terrible, but I'm going to have to say humans.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, what species in Star Wars can you find on any freaking planet in existence?
Duros.
Like, you go, what?
Duros, yeah.
they actually say in the canon that Duros are, they're not more populous than humans, but if you go to a space...
They're just as widespread because of they invented the modern hyperdrive, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I know all that crap. But
Duros!
But, I mean, like, but in also in... I mean, we're kind of skewed being human, but any depiction of Star Wars, half
you're
the main
so
characters are, you know, human.
We're sentient dogs.
Yeah, mostly. I mean, we're sentient dogs, but we, like, breed like viruses. We're everywhere.
That's our real strength. Everything in... Because apparently Admiral Ackbar is in Legacy now, so...
It's a trap!
Apparently every other species in the entire universe lives longer than humans do. So humans have to breed like rats to make up for it.
Yeah, we're space rats. We breed copiously and we're very adaptable. So those are traits I admire.
Breeding copiously? Does Amanda know this?
I can only hope.
She will once the podcast airs.
Hey-o!
Hey-o! Alright, so Frost, what about you?
No.
Eric's definitely saying Duros.
No, actually, mine is not Duros. I was just doing that to troll. I'm kind of a big fan of the Zabrak and the Chiss, of course. The Chiss are my personal favorite.
Okay.
That's because Timothy Zahn Life is probably the best outfit that they've had.
Yeah.
And the books. Let's just be real here. Tim Zahn, come on, guys.
He kickstarted the EU. Yeah.
Yeah, he invented the EU and was like, what? And his books were so good, they were like, okay, we probably can make a lot of money off this. Let's go ahead and do that now. And then they did. But I love his books, and I love the Chiss, even though they don't make any sense evolution.
Even though you can't ever pronounce their names.
That's because you're bad.
What, too many consonants for you?
No, he just doesn't like the fact that they've got hyphens in them. He's just terrible. Mithra Naruto, come on.
They don't have hyphens, they're apostrophes.
Whatever. It's got, they're in three segments.
And I thought they were your favorite race.
They are my favorite race. I know it's an apostrophe. I said hyphen because I said hyphen. What?
Sure.
But all right. they actually have their own language and stuff, unlike Mandalorians. They have a very complicated English form code. They're cool.
All right.
And their entire eyes are red.
Yeah. Glowy red eyes in an oxygen environment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when are you doing a Chiss Mandalorian, Eric?
I've already done one.
I have yet to see you in a full blue face.
Boom! I've been doing one since 2009. Boom!
Where are the photos of you with blue face paint,
there aren't
black
any
hair,
photos of me with
and
blue
red
face
sclera lenses?
Because I don't look like either of my characters.
Either.
So the
boom. No, but Sado.
You say potato, and I tell you to go kill yourself.
Sado.
No, I don't want that.
But you were asking, and since you've asked, you're now going to get a very, very short history lesson. Sado is in fact actually Chiss. He's Frost's grandson, and Frost's daughter, who is human. Has a child with
he's
a Chiss. He's actually half Chiss, but his name
is
actually.
His own half sister?
No.
He's Frost's grandson, but he's also Frost's daughter.
No.
You lost
Frost,
us.
No. Frost had a daughter. Frost's daughter has a son. That son is Sado.
Okay.
That she also had that son with a Chiss. Sado is technically a half Chiss, but I hate D&D half breeds, so I just go with the full blooded because he's blue. He looks most like a Chiss.
So for you, helmet off, out of character.
Yeah, easily. Okay. I mean, that's how it should be, unless you have specifically done some sort of makeup or something to make it so that when you take your helmet off, you are that character. And there are a couple of people who have done that really well.
Well, I know you go pretty heavy into the character backstory and all the little details on your kits. So
yes, I do.
I thought perhaps that might have been in consideration, or you might have done it once or twice and realized way too much work.
But no, I have never gotten painted blue. I'm actually planning with another group of friends to do out of armor costumes for Celebration 7,
cool.
Which I will be doing the Sado costume for. So then I'll be painted blue.
I'm gonna need an Ewok fursuit.
Alrighty. We can do that. I can arrange for that. But, so I do have a Chiss Mando, actually. So, boom!
Boom.
Boom.
Roasted.
Headshot.
All right, so who haven't we done yet? Who isn't?
Steven.
You.
The guy that never talks. Wait, what's that one race that doesn't actually talk?
I don't know.
Sarlacc doesn't technically talk. He just kind of squeals and belches.
You guys want me to start squealing all the time?
Farts every now and then.
I'm hungry.
I'm very hungry.
Feed me the Solo.
Feed me the Gamorrean.
I don't know which one's my favorite. I guess I'd probably say the Trandoshans. I really like those guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bosk is pretty awesome.
It's always been my favorite bounty hunter. Used to be
third, like,
kind of be
juiced.
He wants to grow up to be a lizard, is what we're hearing.
Yep.
And I think we still need to find out Chase's favorite, or Sarsk's favorite.
I think we know what it is already.
What is it?
Gephar.
Yeah. But I didn't really see those as a race, just kind of like...
Subculture human.
You're enough human. I like the Faline.
Faline, yeah, those are cool.
Also cool. Also lizards.
Zeltrons.
Yeah. The bright pink people.
They're red.
It's salmon.
Wasn't there one in KOTOR that was purple? Yeah, yeah, there was.
Probably.
Yeah. They're a lightish red.
Yeah. What?
All right, and that's all the time we have for tonight's episode of Good Lobby Talk Radio. Tune in next time, and see you in the new year. Have a good one. Later.
Bye.
Whip it.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.